listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to episode 3, season 2 of Football in Europe. We're sorry for the delay. Chris Parrott, hello.
That's a mouthful. Episode 2, season 1, whatever it was.
It's not that hard. Season 2, it's our second season, and it's the third one.
Yeah, but to me it sounded like you were like asking for an episode of West Wing or something like that.
Yes, you are the Aaron Sorkin figure, so don't leave. Chris, it's just me and you this week, but we're going to get through lots because I literally have to leave. I've got a flight in a few hours.
Yes.
Actually, much sooner than I shouldn't be doing this, really.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't ramble on.
Great point, Chris. Okay. So do you remember we started Rubens last week, Chris?
For sure. It went down a storm. Knowing your Rubens.
Yeah, knowing your Rubens. This is where you come with a great stat or fact to your mates at the pub or something about European football. And people did send some in, Chris. Do you want to hear them?
Yep.
Okay, this is from La Liga Gav, longtime supporter of the podcast, La Liga Gav. He says, Leganés' first ever goal in La Liga was against Barcelona, and the first ever goal they conceded was from Lionel Messi. So he likes that little bit of history there. Stephen Johnston says Ronaldo is 9 days older than Totti, who is still scoring winners in Serie A.
I like that one. Not bad from Stephen
Johnston. Did you bring one to the table, Chris? Are you that prepared?
Of course I'm prepared. Me? Yes. So my friend Rick knows a lot about European football. He WhatsApped me yesterday and put, are you taking suggestions for Rubens? So I said, yeah. Let me know.
And I really hope this word catches on.
Yeah, but this one is classic him as well. When I did hear an AC Milan one last week, but I can't for the life of me remember it.
So that's it.
That's it. So Rick has an AC Milan one, but he can't remember it.
Rick, get it together for next week for season 2, episode 4.
Yeah, exactly. Well, season 2, episode 4 is going to be a cracker. So, so come on, Rick. What was it?
So what? Yeah. Well, he can't answer that. He's not here. So let's. Let's do your... Come on, what's your little European football factoid?
Okay, mine is Luis Suarez has now played 100 games for Barcelona. Yeah. And astonishingly, he scored 88 goals. Now, that is the most anyone...
word.
That is the most anyone has scored in their first 100 games. It is... How many do you think Lionel Messi scored in his first 100 games?
I don't know. Would he even have been averaging 1 in 2 back then? I don't know.
Exactly. He only scored 41 goals. Neymar, I say only, it's still pretty good, but Neymar, 58 goals. Samuel Eto'o is second with 68 goals. So Luis Suarez has scored 20 more than any other Barcelona player in his first 100 games.
Okay, Chris, do you know what? You've really delivered.
I'm King Ruben this week.
Excellent, well done. Okay, do you want to hear mine?
Yeah.
I don't think mine are as good as that. I've got 3. Zinedine Zidane has equaled Pep Guardiola's run of La Liga straight victories. So Guardiola won 16 league games in a row, and now Zidane's done it. Should we be taking Zidane a bit more? I know he's won the Champions League, but do you know what I mean? Is this guy a genius, Chris? Secret genius?
Well, yeah, he seems to be. That is also without major upheaval in the summer at all. They had a very, very quiet transfer window. Zidane wanted that. He seems to have, I don't know if because of who he is, he maybe has a little more say in everything that goes on at Real Madrid. But I mean, absolutely phenomenal. And you think when he took over from Rafael Benitez, there was no evidence, you know, there was no evidence to say he was going to be a bad coach, but there was no reason to say that he was going to be a particularly good one either. And yet he has, you know, taken it like a duck to water. He's, you know, already won the UEFA Champions League. And, you know, this season they've started absolutely fantastically. Of course, there's bigger tests around the corner. But I go back to last season when he first came in. He had a couple of tough results against the big teams, which is, you know, what you're always going to be tested on and judged upon at Real Madrid. And since then, they just seem to have gone from strength to strength. And He's doing a phenomenal job, and it flies in the face of, you know, that old cliche, well, great players aren't great managers, because at the moment, Zinedine Zidane is, and if he carries on, it could be a very, very good season for Real Madrid.
Yeah, they won 2-0 at Espanyol at the weekend. We'll get onto that in a moment. I've got one more, Ruben. The last time Jose Mourinho lost three games in a row in the same season, 2002. So quite some time.
2002, which is basically when he was just starting.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. Okay, keep your Rubens coming in. Thanks to everyone who did send them in. Chris, let's talk about the Bundesliga before we get going on that. Dylan Glass has tweeted in to say, any chance this week you guys can chat about Christian Pulisic, youngest overseas player to score in the Bundesliga and starting World Cup qualifier for the USA, and he became Dortmund's youngest ever player in a Champions League game. Well, Dylan, you've sort of done the work there for us by giving us all the stats. But I'm, Chris, I'm off to commentate on Dortmund.
Yeah.
They're taking on Wolfsburg, and Pulisic scored at the weekend. He's actually got three in his last four in the Bundesliga. He turned 18 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And also, I have done a bit of reading up on him for Dylan. So his contract actually expires in 2019. People thought it was 2018, hence why Liverpool were inclined to make a bid for him this summer. But they're very excited about him. They, you know, they're saying, could he be the greatest United States player of all time? Obviously, we're way too early for any of that business. But he does look very good, very technically gifted. Perhaps a touch lightweight, but he's really young. And he knows where the goal is, and he can make them as well.
I can't think of a USA player, apart from Freddie Adu on computer games, that has made as big an impact at such a young age in such a major, you know, football league. So, I mean, yeah, he looks exciting. The problem is going to be, you know, how much game time can he get at Dortmund? Because they have, you know, a wonderful array of attacking talent. So further proof of how good he is that he is even anywhere near, you know, getting into that 11, given how many other forwards they have.
Yeah, very true. He might get a kick against Wolfsburg. I know many people will be hearing this after the game, but without Andre Schürrle for the game, who's been playing, and, you know, Tuchel likes to rotate, and he's going to have to this season with the Champions League. And he obviously played in the Champions League the other day. Chris, tell me about your Bundesliga commentary you did the other day. Was it a good one?
It was okay, yeah. Augsburg were beaten at home by Mainz. Really, it was a... it wasn't the game of the highest quality, and then in the last minute it was soured by a horror challenge from Jose Rodriguez on his Bundesliga debut. They were 3-1 up Mainz away from home. They weren't going to throw this lead away, having been pegged back from 4-1 the week before. And he went in really late, really dangerously on core, and it was a terrible injury. You knew it was a terrible injury because, first of all, The Augsburg captain went mad at the challenge. Referee had a look at the injury, saw how bad it was, then showed him a straight red card. And he's got a 16-inch laceration to his shin.
That's longer than a foot.
Yeah, and exactly. It was awful. You could see the blood, apparently went right down to the bone. Fortunately, he didn't break anything, so he's going to be back, they think, in about a month or so. But there's been a Twitter campaign from Mainz, hashtag hardcore, which I quite liked.
basically saying
get better soon. And then I thought slightly oddly, Jose Rodriguez retweeted that. It was one of those challenges which was totally unnecessary.
You did it, mate.
Well, exactly. But you know, it wasn't the type of game where, you know, it was on a knife edge, and you could understand they were 3-1 up. It was in the third minute of stoppage time, and it was a real shocker. It was out of control, and it was very dangerous. And he's very lucky that he's only got that injury, because when it happened, it was one of those that you thought this guy could be out for a long time here. And it was, that was a sour note. Otherwise, very good performance from Mainz, and their first win of the season. Important after doing so well last season, I think, just to get that win, because otherwise, all of the talk starts having lost a couple of players in the summer. Will they be able to, you know, repeat the success? But it was a good win, but it was a terrible challenge.
Werder Bremen have sacked their head coach, Viktor Skripnik, after a 4-1 defeat to Gladbach, which I commentated on that game on Saturday, and they were so disorganised defensively, and I think Frank Baumann, the sporting director of Bremen, had originally said, you know, we're going to give him 10 games to see what happens. And then he went, oh, actually, 45 minutes. And there was even talk that Skripnik on the bus back was told from the game at Gladbach.
I'm right in saying that they changed sporting director in the summer to sort of back Skripnik.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah. They brought in Frank Baumann. The decision was, we're going to change the sporting director, not the coach.
Right.
And now the new sporting director sacked the coach.
Yeah, that's not great.
Torgan Hazard looks really good. I was talking about him a lot on TalkSport on Sunday night with Danny Kelly about how good Torgan Hazard is. He scored 2 goals. He's got 6 already this season.
Yeah.
He's 23. And Chelsea have a buyback.
I was looking it up.
Chelsea have got a buyback, yeah.
Do we know what it is?
I don't know. We don't know the fee. And these buybacks can expire, can't they?
Yeah.
Like Morata's was going to expire at Juve.
Mm.
And Real Madrid kicked it in before that happened. So it's whether that is still active. But if it is, Chelsea should really be considering. Well, only if they're going to play him, but
yeah,
consider bringing him back.
I remember when they signed him, though, there was a, you know, all those years back from Lens, that there was a, you know, everyone's was, oh, he's actually the better brother, which we're never quite sure. That's the Sean and Bradley White Phillips argument. But, you know, he was always seen as a, you know, precocious talent. And, you know, he impressed last season, didn't he, in fits and starts. But he's already got as many goals as he did last season. So it's a heck of a start.
Yeah, do you know Chelsea paid $32 million for Edin, and they paid $400,000 for Torgan, and they sold Torgan Hazard for $6 million. And this, I was, you know, about Chelsea stockpiling of players, that made them over $5.5 million pounds. That's a load of money.
Well, it is. And do you know what? I think we both read Sir Alex Ferguson's book on leadership in the summer, and that was one of the things he said, wasn't it? It's like, you know. You know, if you can take a gamble on somebody and sign them for $500,000 if you're a club of the size of Chelsea or Manchester United, because you know that even if they don't make it, you'll still be able to sell
them
for a lot more than you bought them, which is maybe overlooked because a lot of these clubs have huge squads. But actually, it's partly because it's like, OK, we'll sign 10 players. Only 2 might make the first team. However, the other 8, we're almost certainly not going to lose money on them.
Let's just run through some of the Bundesliga fixtures for the week. So Wolfsburg against Dortmund might be the pick of the midweek fixtures tonight as we record this. Bayern play Hertha. Both sides have won all 3 games. Bayern, pretty unconvincing, but they did rotate in a 3-1 win over Bavarian rivals. Ingolstadt at the weekend. And Dortmund actually go into that Wolfsburg game off the back of 2 6-0 wins after a loss to RB Leipzig. Chris, where should we go next?
Can we just mention Leipzig's 4-0 win as well?
4-0 win at Hamburg. What a juxtaposition between those two clubs.
Oh, absolutely. Because at the very, you know, on season 2, episode 1, I said, off air, I said, well, maybe I'll tip Leipzig just to be, you know, a bit devil's advocate.
Contrary
to finish in the top 4. And I'm sort of wishing I had now. But yeah, great. I mean, great start for them after their promotion.
Yeah, Hamburg, the dinosaur of the Bundesliga. Been there every single season. Their mascot is literally a dinosaur. And there's a clock ticking in the corner of the stadium to show how long they've been in the top flight. And RB Leipzig, weeks, just Bundesliga born, tear them apart. Timo Werner with 2 and Davy Selke with 1. Leipzig play Gladbach on Wednesday. Oh, that's tasty.
That's a good one. Yeah, very tasty.
In France, Edison Cavani scored 4 times for Paris Saint-Germain away at Caen in a 6-0 win. They could even take him off at half-time by that point.
Yeah.
Chris, were we all too harsh on Cavani after he did score against Arsenal, but it was a poor performance where he missed a number of good chances?
Yeah, I mean, the problem was he played really well apart from his finishing.
That's his job.
Yeah, well, exactly. No, I don't think we were, because somebody has to replace Zlatan Ibrahimovic at Paris Saint-Germain. Forget the bravado, and, you know, I am Zlatan. He scored an enormous amount of goals for them. And Cavani, because of the price tag, because of, you know, he cost an awful lot of money when he went there from Napoli. And I don't think people are being harsh on him. I think it now has to be the time that he really steps up. And that's a good start against Caen. He has to prove consistently that he can be the main man, because Paris Saint-Germain need him. Simple as that. It looks like they might have a slightly tougher time domestically. But remember, you know, Laurent Blanc was sacked because he got knocked out by Manchester City in the quarterfinals. So, you know...
That's the level of scrutiny.
He won every major domestic trophy for the last 2 years and was binned off. So they have to do it in the Champions League. And Cavani is going to have to be the guy, probably, as the main, you know, centre forward. So, you know, excellent against Coin. I think it was a big win because they should have beaten Arsenal. I thought they actually played pretty well and then didn't win. But after losing, you know, against Monaco earlier in the season, I think it was important to, you know, that was the type of performance they were putting in, week out last season, thrashing teams. So a great response at him, and I think you and I, Emery, will be feeling a little happier.
Emmanuel Adebayor's not very happy. He thought he'd got himself a move to Lyon.
I don't think he hasn't been very happy for, I don't know, since he left Arsenal.
Probably not. But he genuinely thought, because an injury to Alexander Lacazette has meant that Lyon wants to sign another striker. Adebayor, free agent. He's only 32. And he went for a meeting with Bruno Genesio, the head coach of Lyon. And he said he was asking me loads of weird questions, like if I had a kid, if I was married, what would I do in this situation? He also said that Genesio was scared of the Lyon director of recruitment, Florian Maurice, because he said he had to ask Florian if he was allowed to show Adebayor around the stadium.
Right,
which is weird.
This is Joey Barton-esque and maybe a little bit Balotelli. Okay, Adebayor, you haven't got the move, okay? Most people just don't say anything about it. They don't come out teeing off left, right and centre because, hey, Presto, that probably puts other football clubs off.
Well, exactly. Lyon said it was because he's playing in the African Nations Cup and they'd lose him for a month or two. Sort of, maybe that is genuinely part of the reason.
Just keep your counsel.
Shut it.
So yeah, just don't have a go at somebody because things haven't gone right. You know, I would say. I mean, I say that as a journalist. It's brilliant. It's entertaining, but I don't think it does you any favours. It's like when, you know, often when coaches get sacked, they never go on record and have a go at the owners because they know that it will put other owners off employing them in the future.
What's great is L'Equipe phoned up Adebayor after Lyon released a statement saying why they wouldn't sign him, and I think they've almost literally written down the phone call. They said that. That's nonsense, he told L'Equipe. Monaco are looking very good. They beat Rennes 3-0. Thomas Lemar, the guy who tore apart Tottenham, I thought, when he came on at Wembley Stadium, scored two goals.
Yeah.
One of them a stunner. He's only 20 years of age. Chris, I'll just quickly mention Feyenoord getting a win at PSV Eindhoven.
Yeah.
Do check out the Eredivisie review on Sky Sports this week. Feyenoord 1-0 winners against PSV Eindhoven. A late goal. And Dirk Kuyt, captain of Feyenoord, dazed. I mean, they looked exhausted after the Manchester United win, but they ground it out. And Feyenoord, six wins in a row. Giovanni van Bronckhorst has his side 5 points clear at the top of the table. We'll have to get our Dutch guys on soon, Chris.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's interesting that I love the fact Kuyt is still going. He's got Fenerbahce next week, which will be a nice little reunion for him in the Europa League. It is a lot of football, isn't it? For, you know, suddenly when you think you're fighting on two fronts. So fascinating to see how they go, but what a start for them.
Yeah, Eric Boettingen with the winner at Eindhoven, an away victory. And Brad Jones, by the way, was the hero. He really was. He made like some of the best saves of the season. He made this one save at the end to deny Hector Moreno. And he sort of rebuilt his career in the Eredivisie. He got a move to Feyenoord as well off the back of impressive performances in Holland. And his last-minute save, all the players love him because they crowd around him like he's just scored the winner. And then the full-time whistle goes. So if you get a chance to see the full-time shot to that, it's absolutely brilliant. Chris, after this, we're going to talk La Liga.
We are, yes. But just very quickly, I'm going to talk about another Dutch international.
Go on.
Quincy Promes.
God, he's good, isn't he?
Oh, geez,
he's too
very
expensive,
good.
Chris. Spartak won't sell him for anything less than $1 billion.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, you know, the Russian Premier League lost Hulk, but he's the best player in Russia. Spartak, just quickly, they won 9 of the first 10 titles. You know, you're talking Manchester United dominance. They haven't won the Russian Premier League since 2001. They've got Antonio Conte's former assistant in this summer, and they look... They look a proper team for the first time in about a decade. And Quincy Promes scored one of the best goals I've seen this season, I think, from about 30 yards. It was brilliant. And actually, Cisco won, Zenit won. And after Russia's troublesome summer, certainly on and off the pitch, let's be honest, at Euro, proper title race could really be... Proper title race between the three biggest clubs in Cisco, Zenit and Spartak, I think would be excellent for football in Russia.
Let's talk La Liga.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Diego Simeone, the Atletico head coach, has shortened his contract by 2 years. He previously had a deal until 2020, now 2018. Chris, what's going on?
Well, it's an interesting one. You know, remember in the summer, in the depths of San Siro, after they'd lost the Champions League final on penalties, he said, you know, I have to take time to consider my future. I think everybody of Atleti persuasion panicked and thought, oh no, is this the end? It wasn't. He came back, he signed the new deal. And then, yeah, very interesting. I mean, he says that, and the club say that there's no change. But, I mean, there is, because he shortened his contract by 2 years. And that means 2 years earlier, he can, I mean...
It makes it easier for him to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Bottom line, isn't it? That surely that's... There's no other reason you do that.
Well, no, I mean, exactly. I mean, I know football's odd anyway because there's so much money that basically anybody can buy anybody out of anything, I think, if they really want to. But certainly it means that he will be available, probably, if he doesn't sign a new deal, 2 years earlier. So, I mean... And not only that,
he's cheaper to get out of a contract now.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
So that's... I think it's a goodwill gesture from Atletico that they've taken 2 years off in case he wants to leave after this transfer ban situation ends, because that's January 18.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's it. And he tries to play it down, but, you know, he was like, they asked him about it. Is it true? And he was sort of like, yep, yeah, that's true. So hard to get away with it. Atletico take on Barcelona this week after a 5-0 win against Sporting Gijon. 2 goals for Griezmann, 1 for Gamero, 2 for Torres at the weekend. They go to Barcelona, who have just come off the back of a 5-1 thumping of Leganés. Chris.
It's a cracker. It's a real cracker.
It's a cracker, isn't it? So this one is at the Camp Nou.
Yeah, it is. And this is the first, you know, for years and years, it was a 2-horse race. It's now, as we know, a 3-horse race in La Liga. And every game between Madrid, Barcelona and Atleti is, you know...
It's vital, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is.
So what do you think, Chris? Who's gonna come out on top? Who's looking better?
Very hard. I mean, Atleti had a slow start to the season, 2 draws.
Barca lost to Alaves.
Yeah, they did. I think Atleti might get something, you know. I think Griezmann and Gamero combined really well at the weekend.
They did, actually. They look really good together.
Griezmann has, he never stopped scoring, but he had, from his standards, a relatively slow start to the season after all of his exploits at Euro. I think they can get something. They beat them in the Champions League last season, didn't they? It's a huge couple of weeks because Atleti have Bayern next week in the Champions League too. So I think they can get something. For both those teams, when Real Madrid are winning every week at the moment, it becomes losing or dropping points even more potentially damaging.
Yes, because, I mean, at least one team's going to drop points, and Real Madrid are top by 3 already.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Real Madrid are 4 points ahead of Atleti. If Atleti lost, you know, Madrid could be 7 points ahead of them, which is a massive gap to make
in La Liga. It does matter. People go, it's too early in the season. It does matter in Spain. Because they just win.
They do, exactly.
Real Madrid play Villarreal on Wednesday, by the way.
Which is another really interesting game, although, Villarreal 8 points as well from their start. But, it's the best game in Europe this midweek, Barca-Atleti. It should be brilliant, and it's a real test, and it's a real test for Barca. I noticed that Sergio Roberto didn't play it right back
They played Mascherano, I think. I've not seen the game, but I saw the goals, but... Apparently they played Mascherano at right back.
Yeah, so I mean I think it's fascinating, and Real Madrid are putting so much pressure on both of them by winning that, as I said, it ups the ante a little more ahead of that game.
It certainly does, indeed. Okay, let's talk about the Derby d'Italia very briefly. It's been a couple of days since this game, so I'm just going to mention it, but Inter with a 2-1 win against Juve.
Yeah.
Frank de Boer was under real pressure. There was even talk His job was on the line in the early days of his Inter career, which is extraordinary because he took over very late. He couldn't really get his ideas implemented. The last time Inter turned around and won a game versus Juve at San Siro in Serie A, 37 years ago. Icardi on the score sheet and Perisic.
You know, 3 days on from losing to Hapoel Be'er Sheva of Israel in the Europa League, for Inter to go and beat Juve was huge. Probably very good for Serie A as well, because Napoli are top. Maurizio Sarri lost Higuain, but he's got Milik, who is almost scoring as many goals as Higuain.
Six goals in five games.
Yeah,
Milik.
At the time I thought, okay, you've lost Higuain, massive blow. But I really like Milik. I think he's a great signing. He's young. He's gone to a club on the rise. He's gone to a club where if you're good, you're really, you know, loved. And I think he's turning into a fantastic signing, and they scored 12 goals, Napoli. They, you know, if you want to go and see goals, then watch Napoli, I think, under Sarri. They're brilliantly entertaining, and they're top. And that Juve defeat, they started last season badly. They started this season really well, but that's it's taken the gloss off slightly, losing to their bitter rivals.
Joe Hart kept a clean sheet, his first clean sheet, on his home debut against Empoli. Chris, I saw a bit of the game. It was an awful game. But he looked like an authoritative presence after his mistake on debut. But he said a couple of all these little funny things keep happening with Joe Hart off the pitch.
Yeah, they do. So remember, ahead of his first game, he was down as John Hart on the team sheet, which was a good one.
It's the team sheet given to journalists.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the Torino website, he wasn't in their starting 11 at the weekend. Daniele Padelli was in goal.
They put a different goalkeeper.
Yeah, exactly. They quickly changed that one, and then Joe Hart was back in goal. And as you said, he didn't really have to do anything, did he? But he looked assured. It was, as you said, probably one of the worst games in Europe this weekend. But I don't think he'll care after that difficult start, albeit just one little mistake which led to a goal. He's Italian. Have you heard his Italian?
Yeah, let's hear a bit of this. So Joe Hart at his unveiling spoke a bit of Italian.
Okay, buongiorno a tutti. Grazie per essere venuti così. Destra, sinistra, passa, tira, damila, lascila.
Even made a little joke in there, Chris.
I know. I'm quite impressed.
Not that we can speak Italian, but he's basically saying there, I'm learning words about go left, right, how to talk to his defenders, but I quite like that because, I mean, Gareth Bale's been in Spain 3 years and barely does anything in Spanish.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I think it's most un-English sometimes. But yeah, no, I mean, I thought he, you know, and if I was a Torino fan or a journalist who covered Italian football, I think fair play. And again, like almost to come back to that Adebayor thing, I think all of those things help. You know, if you do.
They buy you time.
Yeah, they do. Exactly.
Why not just do them?
You know, I don't think it is tactical from Joe Hart's point of view. I think he needs to learn Italian because he's a goalkeeper and he needs to communicate. But it won't do him any harm in terms of how supporters and journalists and maybe, you know, his other players, because I'm sure they will have seen, here comes this England goalkeeper who, you know, is on a lot more money than everybody else in that Torino team. And I think if you see him come in and be humble and try and learn the language as quickly as possible, I'm sure that would do no harm at all.
Yeah, Maxi Lopez, at the moment, according to the manager at Torino, Sinisa Mihailovic, is basically overweight and has been put on a special diet. So from one end to the other.
It's not like Sinisa Mihailovic to come out swinging, is it?
No, it's not. He's normally quite a reserved young chap. I want to tell you about a story about Riccardo Reggiani. Riccardo Reggiani, the Chievo player, was in bed at night when he heard screams down his road. He jumped. This is true. I've not just written.
No,
some,
I was
like,
going to say this sounds like not poetry. It sounds like the start of a book.
Well, I'm going to tell it all nice, like a nice little story. He jumped out of bed, put on some clothes, and saw a man attacking a woman in the street. Imagine the scene. It was around 3 a.m. He saw that the man slammed the woman against a car. Reggiani could not stand for this. He stepped in and pinned the guy to the ground. He says he didn't throw a punch because he's never done it before in his life. He pinned the guy to the ground until the police came to save him. He said, "Don't call me a hero." End of story.
Oh, end of story.
Like that?
Yeah, it's really
that's
good.
True.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, I don't like the story. It's a horrible tale, but good on him. Well done.
Apparently, both people involved in that were just drunk and knew each other or something.
Oh.
But still, good.
Yeah, still very good.
This week, Chievo take on Sassuolo, Milan host Lazio in the Tuesday night fixture. Juve take on Cagliari and Napoli go to Genoa. Chris, finally, the Ballon d'Or has ended its association with FIFA. France Football, the iconic magazine that ran the award, that has been running the award for many years, has now got it back on its own. And journalists will vote solely for the Ballon d'Or. I'm not a massive fan of... But basically, I don't want to hear about the Ballon d'Or until like it happens. Until literally someone has got it. But what's going on here? Do you think FIFA have seen an opportunity that they want to do their own thing?
Not sure. As you said, the Ballon d'Or is definitely still... You know, I'm not a great fan of awards. I find BBC Sports Personality... nauseating sometimes, in all honesty. You know when it'll be like, you know, Mo Farah will be having done the double-double, will be crossing the line, and somewhere someone will say, well, he's going to win Sports Personality now. He's not bothered about that.
He's won the award. The award has happened.
Yeah, but also
he's won the race or whatever.
Yeah, he's just won Olympic gold. He doesn't care about an award ceremony.
He's not going over the line thinking, oh, maybe I'm going to get that thing off Sue Barker.
Exactly. But, however, the Ballon d'Or... It is the most prestigious award. You still talk about players now, you know, they won three, you know, World Footballers of the Year awards. So I think this one is actually very noteworthy.
My suspicion is that FIFA, from what the Ballon d'Or now is absolutely crazy, and the big award ceremony and Pogba in a purple suit and all this stuff, that they've seen... Well, we can just do our own one.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. I honestly think that's what it is. It's a marketing. I think it's a marketing thing.
I wondered, but did you say which way did the split happen? FIFA from France Football?
It doesn't say. It just says FIFA and France Football have ended their association with the Ballon d'Or.
Well, I mean, in many ways, but maybe I'm different. I'd almost consider it now more prestigious that it's just gone back to how it was.
Yeah, but France Football doesn't have the money.
Yeah, of course.
Or the marketing thing. But then, you know, you hear the players talk and they just say, they don't say, I got the best player. They say, oh, I got the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, exactly.
It says Ballon d'Or, Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
I wonder if the horse has bolted in terms of that's the award that everyone aspires to win. And sponsors would love to get on board with that now, probably, if it's just
quite. I mean,
France Football.
I still think of these things very hard to... You can't ever buy history when it comes back to this. I still think whoever wins the Ballon d'Or, it will, you know, they've got the name. I really, right now, if it was tomorrow, I'd like Antoine Griezmann to win it.
That's what Diego Simeone said at the weekend, actually. Said he should win it. Okay, Chris, we're done. I need to go.
You do? Are you packed?
No, nothing.
That's poor. You always pack the night before.
I couldn't. Too busy.
Oh, too busy. Too little time.
Look, we'll do a proper big normal show on Monday, ahead of the Champions League as well. Chris, what you got on this week?
I have got another Russian game, which very much looking forward to. As I said, I think the title race is going to be really good. And there isn't just one player dominating the league this season, so it should be really entertaining.
Okay, join us again next Monday on Football in Europe.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews, and special features.